This podcast is brought to you by ClearBridge Investments. Meet an evolving economy confidently with ClearBridge Active Equities, the foundation of a resilient portfolio. ClearBridge, a Franklin Templeton company. Go to clearbridge.com to learn more.
Please stay tuned for important disclosure information at the conclusion of this episode.
Hi, and welcome to a special bonus episode of The Long View. I'm Jeff Patak, Global Director of Manager Research for Morningstar Research Services and one of the co-hosts of The Long View. Normally, I'm joined by my colleague and co-host, Christine Benz, but in this mini-episode, I'm flying solo and Christine will be back on the next episode as usual. Recently, I had the chance to briefly catch up with Vanguard Chairman and CEO Tim Buckley at Morningstar's 31st Annual Investment Conference in Chicago. Tim was at the conference to collect the 2019 Morningstar Award for Exemplary Stewardship, which our analysts bestowed on Vanguard for consistently putting investors front and center where they belong. By way of introduction, Tim has been running Vanguard since January 2018, when he took over from his predecessor, Bill McNabb. Tim's a longtime Vanguard veteran, having joined the firm in 1991. Prior to taking over the reins as Vanguard's CEO, Tim served in a number of leadership roles, including Chief Investment Officer, Head of Vanguard's Retail Investor Group, as well as Chief Information Officer. With more than $5 trillion in assets spread across over 400 funds globally, Vanguard is one of the world's largest asset managers. We hope you enjoy this conversation, which we recorded live at the Morningstar Conference in May 2019. From the 31st Annual Morningstar Investment Conference in Chicago, Illinois, I'm Jeff Patak, Global Director of Manager Research for Morningstar Research Services, and I'm very pleased to be joined today by Tim Buckley. Tim is Vanguard's chairman and CEO. He's here at the Morningstar Investment Conference to collect Vanguard's award as Exemplary Steward as part of Morningstar's annual Investment Excellence Awards. Tim, congratulations on receiving the award. Maybe you can talk to start out about, you know, what stewardship has meant, investor centricity has meant to Vanguard as an organization since it got its start, and then more recently as you've grown into a larger firm.
Jeff, and thank you for the award. Sure. It is investor centricity. I mean, it's the core of Vanguard. I mean, we were started by Jack Bogle, and he founded the firm as a firm that would be owned by its clients. So a lot of people don't know this, but if you invest in the Vanguard funds, well, the funds own Vanguard. So when you're an investor in our funds, you actually own Vanguard. You're my boss, per se. And that makes it easy for us to always put their interests first, because we don't serve an outside family. We don't serve public shareholders. We only serve our clients. And I've been around Vanguard since 1991, and that tone has not changed. It was that way at $63 billion. It's that way at $5.4 trillion. We only have one group to serve, our clients.
And we applaud you on that focus. One of the things that has changed a bit is sort of the way you would define client. I think maybe if we talked 10, 20 years ago about client, we were typically talking about an investor in one of the Vanguard mutual funds. You now have a more varied set of businesses. Granted, they're still investor and outcome focused, but you might be managing wealth for a client with an advisory component. And so can you talk about how you as CEO and your leadership team try to balance off some of the pressures that might attend to that, not only being focused on the fund investor, but the other types of clients that you have?
Sure. I mean, our mission is the same, regardless of whether we're serving clients directly or we're working with advisors and helping them serve their clients. So we're going through a 401k plan. At the end of the day, we're trying to help people retire better. Help them put their kids through college. You want to take a stand for all investors, right? Give them the best chance of investment success. That's what we're trying to do. Mm-hmm. And so a few years back, we realized, hey, we can actually do that, not just directly by ourselves, but there are like-minded advisors out there. They're trying to do that each and every day. They're trying to actually help their clients retire better. So why not work with them? Why not provide them with the mutual funds, the ETFs, that will enable them to do that? And we've done it with thought leadership for them. We've done it more and more with other services. So whether you come to us directly or whether you come through a like-minded advisor, we see our mission to serve you as the same.
Vanguard is enjoying great success. One of my questions, though, is it enough to be a fund company at scale? I mean, clearly you're taking share from the rest of the industry, but you have competitors that maybe are leading with other lines of business or giving away things for free. And so what's the future of a scaled fund company, a company that is purely focused on funds? Do they continue to have a vibrant future in this industry?
Well, I'll give you a two-sided answer to this one. One, at $5.4 trillion, there is incredible scale there for the funds. And funds I mean, no one's come up with a better vehicle for investing than the fund. That said, you can't take that for granted. Right? A fund has professional management, it's got scale, it's got low costs, it's got liquidity, all of these great things wrapped into it and makes it so defensible. But how many times have you heard that throughout the life of businesses? Where, hey, you know what, film is a great business. It was until the digital camera came along. So we don't want to end up in that situation. So we're always looking, is there a better solution out there?
Yeah.
That's one ad. So that's the two sides I would talk about. The fund is a great business, but don't take it for granted that it'll always be the perfect answer. Mm-hmm. Define yourself by why you do something. We're there for investors to have the best chance of investment success. And right now, funds are the best vehicle for that. Down the road, it might be something different. And increasingly, we're looking towards advice as well as another way to help investors.
So if we did a little bit of visioning, just imagine we're trying to gaze into our crystal ball, Vanguard 10 years into the future, and observing the differences between that Vanguard and the Vanguard that exists today, what do you anticipate would be the biggest differences that we would notice as observers?
Well, Jeff, you promised not to play this back to me in 10 years, right? But if we look 10 years out, I think and it's really tough to predict. Who would have predicted ETFs would be as large as they are today? But we look out there, you'll see that there's two ways that you help a person. A person's success depends on the funds they use and the advice they get. We've been able to help revolutionize the fund industry, bring down costs, make it more client-focused. The advice industry is going through a similar revolution. It's one where technology now is making it really easy to set up a portfolio, to get the right asset allocation, find the low-cost funds, rebalance it, do it in a tax-efficient way. So technology is allowing us to bring down the cost of delivering advice. Mm-hmm. And so we hope those savings will be passed on to clients so they can keep more of their return, not just from the funds, but from advice. And we hope it frees up advisors to do more value-added things for clients.
Sure.
Like think through solutions for their kids and what they want to do in their retirement.
Yeah. I want to talk some more about advice, but before we do that, maybe just to talk about it in terms of revenue mix. And I know that you're a privately held firm and you don't disclose such things, but obviously when you talk to your leadership and game out the future, you would think about what is a desired sort of business mix to have. And so do you expect that if we looked at the business through that lens, that there would be meaningful changes in the future? Whereas in the past, you've derived most of your revenue, I would imagine, from the investment strategies themselves. In the future, you derive a significant portion of revenue from other types of services like providing advice to clients.
Yeah. I think the way you think about Vanguard as a business, it's what do we want to do for our clients?
Yeah.
We don't set, oh, here's the revenue mix we want or the growth target. At the end of the day, we're owned by our clients. So our success is determined by what value have we delivered for them. So we define it by the percent of our funds that are outperforming the competition. And increasingly, we'll define it the advice we're providing. Is it helping clients get on track? Are they on track for their goals, retirement, putting their kids through college education? And we'll define success that way, less so than what the revenue mix is.
Okay.
For at the end of the day, being a mutual, being owned by our clients, it's less important.
What do you think happens to advice fees in the future? It's a question I'm sure you get on a fairly regular basis, but now that you are an active participant, some would say a competitor in that market, you know, there's the chance that the way you're setting fees will have an influence on the rest of the industry same way it has in the mutual fund business. And so if we had to game that out, what do you think it looks like in 5 or 10 years' time?
Well, we're surrounded by a number of fantastic advisors here. And you take Vanguard out of the equation. If you ask them and say, what's going to happen to fees? I imagine 90% of them, they're going to come down.
Yeah.
And it always happens with technology. Technology makes things more efficient. You can do more, but the price comes down. It gives you more for less. And I can't imagine anything but the price coming down around advice. And both advisors and, most importantly, the client benefiting from that.
And so, not that it's your job to offer counsel to advisors who might be worried about their fees coming down in the future, but if you were so engaged and had to offer some advice to an advisor about how to adapt their business to falling fees in the future, what would you tell them to focus on? You know, maybe more specifically than just use technology to make your practice more efficient. Are there specific things they should be thinking about?
Jeff, I'll actually talk to advisors all the time about this, which is embrace the technology, right? Embrace the technology to take that portfolio management where you spent 40 to 50% of your time, automate that. Maybe we can help you do that. Maybe someone else helps you do that. Bring those costs down. Now you have 50% of your time freed up. What can you do with that time? Well, do what clients value most. Go out and get to know them. Right, give them that financial peace of mind that their family is going to be all set. Why? Because you got to understand that, well, they have a doctor in the family and a social worker, right? And they want to take care of their needs differently. Set up the solution, Matt. They want to do something fun in retirement. Is it a house? Is it start a new business, a charity? Help them with that solution. Technology can't do that. Mm-hmm. At least, I don't see the future where it's doing that for you. It will be able to do the investment management, the portfolio management side, the tax efficiency side. It's really going to have a tough time doing that customization client by client.
Yep. I wanted to talk for a minute about cost supremacy. I think those are words that have often been associated with Vanguard, and deservedly so. You are the cost leader if we look across asset classes and the categories where you compete. But one of the things that's changed meaningfully in the past few years is firms seeming to be willing to give some of their products, at least a subset of them, away, so long as they can monetize the customer in other ways. And so I wanted to get a sense from you of how you think about the importance of cost supremacy in the future. Is it important for Vanguard to always be near the bottom of the ledger when it comes to cost in the different categories it competes in, a world where other firms are willing to give things away gratis in order to monetize in other ways?
And I think in your question is the answer, which is cost is an investment philosophy for us. The idea of being low cost, keeping more of your return, it's not a marketing ploy. You can't be low cost if you're only low cost in one or two products, but you're charging a lot more somewhere else across the portfolio. What matters is not the cost of the product, but the cost of the entire portfolio. So, yes, you can have low cost index funds, but you better have low cost active, high yielding money markets, low cost advice. It is a full array, and you have to worry about the whole portfolio. So I think it will always matter, and right now there's no one even close to us. I mean, the nearest competitor would be about double our cost all in, and if you look at the industry in general, we're about a fifth the cost.
I want to talk about growth and some of the things that you're doing to try to stimulate growth, one facet of which is product development, product introduction. And so I think that when I took a quick look at product introductions you've done over the course of the last year, I mean, you've been judicious about it, but it looks like most of it has been ex-US. Also, interestingly, it looks like a fair number of the strategies that you've launched have had maybe an ESG or ethical focus to them. And most of the products have been ETFs. And so do you think that those themes I've just mentioned, ex-US, ESG focus, ETF is the wrapper, do you think that's the pathway to future growth for Vanguard, especially as you look abroad?
Well, there's a few things in there. We'll talk about the US businesses separate from moving abroad. US investors will need to invest more globally. We tell investors all the time, hey, 40% of your assets should be outside of the US. And it's just, you don't want to be concentrated, you don't have a huge home country bias. So we encourage people to go beyond in the U.S. Since we think the trend of investing outside the U.S., it is there and it will continue. And it's just good investment philosophy. ESG is another category that's forming. And it really depends where you are in the country, how loud you hear the noise around it. But when we offer a fund, we want to know there's a client need. We want to know that there's true investment philosophy behind it. We want to know that we can be one of the best in offering it. Now, this is one where there are clients that certainly have a need to invest that way, or a want or a desire to invest that way. We debated, is there a true philosophy around this? And you know, we'll be launching a fund that very much goes after, like, hey, can you actually go and find companies? Oh, and by the way, they're going to be good in societal scores, and they got great governance. You can have your cake and eat it, too. So ESG, we believe, will continue to grow. The other trend you'll see with us is you've seen factor funds come from Vanguard. You've seen liquid alt funds in the past. You've seen some of the ones around what I would call more professional funds. And that is because we're in the advisor business too. Some funds are great in the direct channel, and other ones we've launched much more for advisors as they look to hedge against inflation or diversify their portfolios differently. They belong much more in advice models. And what we try to do is we'll launch those funds and make sure they're pointed more towards one channel versus the other.
Since you mentioned active, you know, I wanted to ask you about discretionary active management, which has played, you know, I would say a sort of a cornerstone role for Vanguard in the past when we think about hallowed funds like Wellington or Prime Cap, what have you.
That's where we started.
That's where you started. And so, but it seems like at your current size, and given the need to make sure that you can scale into investments that you would make, that that's not going to be an area of emphasis. It'll certainly be an area that you're attentive to, I would imagine you would say. But can you talk about the future of that format of investing at Vanguard and whether I'm correct or others would be correct in their assumption that that probably wouldn't be on strategy for you at this point, given your size?
Well, it's $1 trillion at Vanguard, active management. So it is sizable. Probably we are one of the largest active managers in the world.
Yeah.
We happen to be one of the best of them, too. When you look at 90%, I believe if you look over 10 years, 91% of our funds are outperforming their competition. And that same 91 echoes when you look at you look at how we've done versus our benchmark, you asset weighted, we've outperformed our benchmark by 91 basis points across asset weighted. So the performance is there. As far as the dedication, the focus, we believe in it. We believe in active. We believe in low-cost active, not high-cost active. We'll continue to support low-cost active. It's probably where I know I spend a huge amount of my time there, meeting with our outside advisors, one of them winning an award here. And we'll continue to support that channel. We believe that, hey, if you have low-cost active and low-cost indexing, they can complement each other well. Think about a core satellite portfolio. Yep. What doesn't work is high-cost active. And all the money flowing to index funds, it's not because active doesn't work. It's because high-cost active doesn't work.
I wanted to go back to ESG for a moment. I think that one of the things that I struggle with as an analyst is what does success look like? So I suppose there's different paths that one can choose. You can invest in a strategy that incorporates ESG, sustainable matters, in an explicit way. Or you can just invest in a traditional way. And then on the side, you can try to accomplish these other goals that you have, right? And so if you were messaging out to a client why it is they might want to consider a strategy that explicitly considers and incorporates in sustainability factors and try to convince them that at the end of a given period they will have succeeded, how would you suggest that, you know, they measure their success and know that it's actually worked for them at the end of that period?
I don't think, you know, some people are willing to give up return. They're just saying, I believe in my values so much, I'm willing to give up return. Just exclude these companies, and I don't care if I take tracking error, give me an index fund, exclude them, and if I underperform, so be it. I believe so wholeheartedly in this. If you think about active strategies, they don't have to be that. Yeah. Right? You don't have to. You can still get your return on an active strategy, you just because you're not buying 5,000 companies.
Right.
You just need to go find great companies that, well, they're great for the environment too, by the way, and they have good governance. So it's you can. That's what I was saying earlier. You can have your cake and eat it too, in the active ESG approach. Yep. In the index approach, you just have to make sure that you're not taking too much tracking as you exclude certain companies.
Yep.
But in your question, you'll notice that this is an area still being formed, right? Still being defined. Is it how I start my research, or is it an overlay at the end of my research, or is it just how I ask my questions? Everyone's got a different interpretation right now. And that's what's going to form out in the years ahead.
And what do you think the approach that you settled on represents best practices? How did you arrive at that conclusion?
Well, unfortunately, we're in a quiet period, so I can't talk about specific offerings on some of the funds. But look, we know that on the index funds that we offer, on the ETFs, we did them in such a way that the tracking won't be big, and it's exclusionary. What we have to fight is the battle of, well, we excluded these three industries, and now someone's got a fourth or a fifth, or you just have to, you got to push back, keep rolling it up. And on the active side, having active strategies that just go for much more, go for the great companies that also happen to be great with ESG. You don't want to compromise return.
I wanted to shift gears a bit and talk about maybe capital allocation and investment in the business. And, you know, I would imagine one of the questions that you commonly reckon with, maybe in consultation with your board, is, you know, what do we need that we can't build? And so, I think that Vanguard is not an acquisitive firm. You've grown organically writ large. But, you know, is there an example of something where you feel like it's something that you or your clients could need in the future where that capability doesn't exist currently and perhaps you're in the early stages of development or thinking about other ways you can come into that capability?
So we've looked. We've looked at firms. We've tried to buy firms. We're very value conscious, as you can imagine. And when you think about an acquisition, it's usually because you can't get into a market that you need to be in that will bring value for your clients, or speed is of the essence. We play a very long game. So when we do a trade-off, we'll say, well, we could go buy that capability, and so we'll put a price on it. But we also know that we could build that capability and how much time it would take. And so we have those negotiations, and more times than not, that founder doesn't want to take that price, and so we just go build that capability, and so be it. But we do look at that. We don't feel like everything has to be built in-house. Many of our systems were brought in from the outside, which might surprise some people. Even some competitor systems sit at Vanguard. But we do that trade-off all the time.
You know, my closing question for you, and it's a bit of an odd question, if we were to imagine hypothetically that the owners of Vanguard, that is the fund shareholder, if they were to decide that they were okay with you demutualizing, what is the one thing that you would do as CEO and chairman to safeguard the culture, to make sure that the Vanguard as it was continues to be the Vanguard that we've known into the future?
That's exactly why we'll never demutualize. we would lose that. That core essence that we believe, our key strategic advantage is that we only have one group to serve, our clients. As soon as we lose that, right, we have to decide, how do I serve you while giving money to somebody else? The essence of Vanguard is lost. So Vanguard is defined by its structure, and we're going to keep it.
Well, we'll leave it there on that note. Tim, thank you so much for your time and insights. Congratulations on the Stewardship Award that you received at this year's Morningstar Investment Conference. And we look forward to speaking to you again in the future.
Thank you for recognizing us.
This recording is for informational purposes only and should not be considered investment advice. Opinions expressed are as of the date of recording. Such opinions are subject to change. The views and opinions of guests on this program are not necessarily those of Morningstar Inc. and its affiliates. Morningstar does not guarantee the accuracy and/or the completeness of the data presented herein. Jeff Patak is an employee of Morningstar Research Services, LLC. Morningstar Research Services, LLC is a subsidiary of Morningstar Inc. and is registered with and governed by the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. Morningstar Research Services shall not be responsible for any trading decisions, damages, or other losses resulting from or related to the information, data, analyses, or opinions, or their use. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. All investments are subject to investment risk, including possible loss of principal. Individuals should seriously consider if an investment is suitable for them by referencing their own financial position, investment objectives, and risk profile before making any investment decision.